Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Bill Sardi. Now, this is ordinarily Open Line Wednesday, and I really look forward to doing the Open Line program, but I felt that with things unfolding as they are, as far as the dread swine flu epidemic that is taking place in Mexico now, and we're hearing about the moving troops towards the border, we're hearing about a child dying in Texas, a 23-year-old child, the disease is now in America, and people are dying. And, of course, the president talking about the threat this evening. And, ladies and gentlemen, I think maybe we need to take a step back and look at what we really know about how they create panics in the world today, how they introduce new diseases in the world today, how there are laboratories that actually create terrible and virulent diseases. And as far as that child who died in Texas, they didn't mention it. At least you had to read a long way to find out. It was really a child that came from Mexico who was deadly ill, who they brought into Texas for treatment. And the child, who apparently did have some impairment of their immune system, did succumb to the disease. It's a tragedy. But this was not an American child who died. This was a Mexican child who contracted the disease in Mexico. And, well, without further ado, let's get to Bill Sardi, because he's done a lot of research into this, has some fascinating insight, and I want you out there in the listening audience to hear what he has to say and to heed what he has to say. Go right ahead, Bill. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, these are exciting times, as you tell me all the time. Sometimes it makes people nervous. I do want to get the discussion. Maybe you can take some callers if I can get through some of this. It's all new material probably for your audience, but I wanted to go through a brief timeline so they would understand some of the events unfolding that surround this, and it helps us understand it a little bit better. And, of course, we do know about swine flu. We did hear about it years ago with Jerry Ford running for president. Swine flu was, in 1976, brought out under the threat of a swine flu. Jerry Ford was trying to be president at the time. He needed some way to show great leadership and win an election, and all of a sudden the swine flu cropped up out of a military base. Seemed like it got exposed intentionally there. One trooper died, four were ill. That was enough to excite health authorities to say that the entire population had to be inoculated. And, of course, about 20% of the population was. There were hundreds of cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome, a respiratory and paralytic type of problem. And, of course, some people died from that. There were a few deaths and lots of lawsuits and so on. So the public heard the march, jumped, and about 20% did go for the vaccine at the time. I believe it was an entire publicity stunt in order to get Jerry Ford elected.
But so one person died. There were four ill from this terrible epidemic. And, of course, Jerry Ford, remember, of course, people were furious with Ford because he had pardoned Nixon. Nixon wasn't guilty of anything at all. The phrase was, we don't want to look back, we just want to look forward, so we're going to pardon Nixon. And people were furious with Jerry Ford. He had to do something to prove that he was a real leader. He was going to save us from the threat of swine flu. There were 500 cases of Guillain-Barré disease. 25 people died of the vaccination. And, of course, about that time, they decided to stop the vaccination, and there wasn't any epidemic. It was all hype. It was all created by the media with the help of the government, of course.
So you can understand, in relation to today, we have one death from a child intentionally brought over here to go to stage 5 and possibly stage 6 with the World Health Organization alert ratings. Now, the alert rating is it's spreading across borders. So they made that happen here with this case. So then they could say, now they're mobilizing troops, as I understand it, and Homeland Security. I don't know whether that's to go to lock down us in quarantine, but hopefully a border would close somewhere here. We've never been able to get the Mexican border to close properly. I've been saying for years, not because we want to freeze out Mexican labor or people or create hardship. It's because the Mexican population is not healthy, and they do bring disease, including tuberculosis, pertussis, which is whooping cough, and, of course, many other diseases here. And so they're not screened for health. They don't go through the regular things. And then tuberculosis and whooping cough have been, of course, coming here because of that. The authorities cover up the whooping cough problem, which is in most of the schools in the United States. But when kids get a cough, why, they don't go to look that it's really whooping cough coming in here from the immigrant children. So nonetheless, this is kind of what goes on. But I want to alert you that an entire population was called to a mandated vaccination of the swine flu, all in 1976, over one death with nothing crossing any border. So, I mean, this is the kind of insanity that Americans will fall for. Anyway, we simply go to, in our timeline here, to January 2009 when Mexican President Felipe Calderon, of course, visits the White House shortly after our president's election. The economy in Mexico is faltering. The peso is due to be devalued. It's a very difficult time. The president there is going to have to do something to hold on to control of the population. It's also, at this time, followed by a trip by our president, Barack Obama, to Mexico a few days before this whole thing started. In fact, you've probably read where he shook the hand of someone there in Mexico, an authority there at a local museum or something, where the guy died a few days later, supposedly the swine flu. They're denying that now. This was April 16 and 17. And, of course, he visited the National Anthropology Museum. And Felipe Solis was the director there. He's now deceased. And, of course, the people wondering whether Barack Obama brought the disease back here. And, of course, but we can see the exchange. The president was here, then our president was there.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Bill Sardi. And, of course, Bill is just talking about the series of events, of course, that they were having trouble in Mexico, real economic problems. And of course, the president down there was having real questions about his popularity. But, of course, now he's doing very well. He's certainly a lockdown in Mexico. He's suspended children going to school. He's acted like a real leader to control this this epidemic. And we don't know how many people have died. They say somewhere 140 people may have died. They always, you notice how they say may have, possibly have, probably had. They don't say it really happened because they haven't checked most of them for this specific type of virus. But pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, certainly in 9/11 we learned that 20,000, 30,000 people died. That came down to about 2,000 or 3,000. So they shock us with a high body count in the beginning. So we do see the exchange of the presidents in between all this time in a kind of an eerie kind of series of events. On March the 19th, now this is almost a month before our president visits there, why the French president, Nicolas Sarkozy, is visiting Mexico City to announce an agreement with Mexican authorities to build a 100 million euro facility, that's the value of it, to manufacture influenza vaccine in Mexico City. Now, the company is Sanofi Aventis, a French company, built a facility to produce 25 million doses of seasonal flu vaccine. That's kind of an odd development, I would think. And, of course, this thing had actually been brewing for some time before it was announced in April, and there were developments there, children getting sick, people getting sick, and then finally deciding that it was flu, then finally deciding that they better send some of the samples up to Canada. This was on April the 17th, where they then were confirmed as swine flu. But the odd thing is it seems to have a kind of a four-pronged type of a flu, which we'll try to explain to you, but it has a swine flu, it has a human flu. There's four strains in there. It seems to be an actual intentionally designed virus to give humans a broad exposure to a lot of the full range of type A influenza viruses, which I'll try to explain.
Well, I think it's important that for people to understand that swine get influenza all the time. The swine
30% of our pigs here in the country have it, and there are human swine cases throughout the world and have been for the last 10 years.
But they're usually very mild, and nobody dies of them. Very, very rarely.
They are diagnosed, and there isn't a pandemic called over 1 or 2 or 5 or 10 or 20. And, you know, and most people get the swine flu, don't even know they have it. Now, oddly enough, on March the 19th, now this is clearly a month before Barack Obama visits, an article in the Seguin, Texas Gazette Enterprise. Now, this is a newspaper there written by a writer, Ron Maloney. It suggests that a rehearsal for a pandemic disaster is being scheduled for May the 2nd. Isn't this odd? And it says that the Guadalupe County Emergency Management and their counterparts around the country are preparing for just such a scenario. You mean all the county health departments in the United States are going to be conducting suddenly emergency rehearsals for a pandemic flu outbreak? And this was a month before we have any of this going on. How could this possibly be happening as just by coincidence? So apparently government had foreknowledge of all of this. And we're going to go on and explain this foreknowledge issue because it gets obvious that government knew all of this was coming. And what we have is a rather odd press release from Replicans Limited, a Boston vaccine maker, which said in its own press release right after this was announced by health authorities here and the World Health Organization that Mexico was having a problem with swine flu. This company in Boston then says, well, they had predicted this outbreak a year earlier and shared it with U.S. government authorities. And in fact, they brag that they have a technology that can predict the eventual gene mutations leading on changes in the amino acid sequences and so on, so that they can predict the changes that will lead up to a pandemic strain that no one has immunity to. So this company then issues a press release, but in it unwittingly concedes that they've been working with government here in the United States. So we have some complicit argument here that the United States government certainly had advanced knowledge of this whole thing and was certainly preparing rehearsals by county health authorities and so on to deal with this. The article in that Texas paper, county plans to deal with the unthinkable, and they plan to have drive-in vaccinations. And this was, of course, a rehearsal. If they did this rehearsal, they would need 1,000 volunteers to attempt to vaccinate the entire population of that county. In South Texas, 115,000 people. They said in 36 hours they were going to try and do this. Now, this would be a rehearsal only, but it would require automobile lines miles and miles long lined up, of course, as people would get these injections in their car. It says here 41 miles long and so on. So you imagine doing this for a larger town in Texas like San Antonio. There's five cities in Texas with a million population. So you can see that all of a sudden this looks like it's more of a staged event. And then, of course, Dr. John Carlo, the Dallas County medical director, then is seen on television in a YouTube clip, and his quote is, "This strain of swine influenza that's been cultured in a laboratory is something that's not been seen anywhere actually in the United States or the world, so this is actually a new strain of influenza that's been identified." So he's really saying here that this is actually an engineered type of a virus, not seen anywhere else, cultured in a laboratory. He knows this is synthetically made up and blurbs it out You can find it on YouTube, Dr. John Carlo. It was the first broadcast by the Globe and Mail in Canada, but you can find it elsewhere. And, of course, what they do concede here, though, is that not all the cases of flu are being caused by that swine influenza. There are other strains, but somehow they're just emphasizing this swine flu so that we understand really what's going on. Now, the number of deaths, I'm hearing everything from doctors are dying like flies, that they're, reporting heart attacks as the cause of death. I just talked to people in Mexico City within the hour, and all of these rumors are running around Mexico. And, of course, the people there, we started out with a level 3 World Health Organization alert. Now we're now up to 4. Then we went to 5 today. And so, you know, they seem to be mobilizing and making all this happen. It was a director at the World Health Organization said we'd be very serious signal that countries ought to be dusting off their pandemic plans if it goes up to a level 4. Well, we passed that yesterday. So pandemic plans, you're talking about major lockdown, quarantines, inability to get on airplanes, all kinds of issues going on there. So we do see this spreading to the United States, also countries like France, Canada, New Zealand. But again, all these seem to be children who had visited, the school children had visited Mexico and then somehow came down with this. It just seems too obvious to me, like they might have been exposed on an airplane or something. Nonetheless, all these cases have resolved. We don't see any mortality out of this. The mortality rate in the 1918 Spanish flu was about 2.5 to 5%, roughly. That is the number of cases that got the flu. How many died? About 2.5 to 5 out of 100. And here we have usually a 1 to 4% mortality rate in swine flu when it becomes a human issue. But here in Mexico, there's about 2,000 infected. These numbers are all over the map, so we have different sources. They say about 159 died in the one article I read, and of course, that would give us about an 8% mortality rate, which would be way over what the Spanish flu was. But recall now, this is in an unhealthy population. This is they don't have good nutrition. They have other diseases. They walk around the street with tuberculosis and whooping cough and other diseases. So they have co-infection, and this compromises their immune systems. They don't have clean food and water and public hygiene. So this is the reason we believe at why you see, of course, the higher rate of mortality, and it's not going anywhere else.
But don't you think, Bill, that an awful lot of people down there probably have the disease? It's so mild that they don't even report it. They
don't go to the doctor. Well, absolutely, because, you know, if you've been to Mexico, it's a population of 100 million people, and there's so many people, which they call the campesinos, living out in the country. And, of course, they're isolated. And the issue is, how would they even get this? They're getting it in some manner. And we're not sure what the geographical distribution is. It seems to be centered around Mexico City, which tells us there's been an exposure there intentionally. Now, it's kind of interesting when you read some of the issues about how certain influenza virus pandemics began. And, of course, they say every 68 years or so, there's an outbreak. And, of course, that doesn't really hold true. They had an outbreak in 1918, the Spanish flu, and then, of course, the Hong Kong flu was 1968. We had, in between, a Russian pseudo-pandemic, they called it, 1977, which was not 68 years. Between the Asian flu was 1957, Hong Kong flu 1968, Russian pseudo-pandemic, they call it. Well, they don't tell us now. They're only admitting years later that the Russian pseudo-pandemic, which they call a pseudo-one, is because it got released from a frozen, stored 1950 human virus out of a laboratory.
Hold that thought, Bill. We'll be right back here in just a moment. And the question is, where did this entirely new organism come from? Bill, go ahead, pick up the story.
Well, course, you know, as we say, government had foreknowledge. We're not really convinced, you know, that government is just acting like these things.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
5N1, very similar to what, of course, caused the Spanish flu many, many years ago, back in 1918. You remember, of course, they sent people up to the permafrost to dig up the bodies so they could get samples of this deadly virus and then bring it into our laboratories and start culturing it. Why would you do that? It doesn't make any sense. If it ever got out of the laboratory and started to spread again, it could kill hundreds of millions of people. Why would you get a new virus and then circulate it all over the world in laboratories? And then we hear that within the last 3 weeks, somebody went into a lab there at Fort Detrick, Maryland, and stole 3 vials of deadly viruses. Why would you have deadly viruses unless they were under, you know, totally locked down where they could not be lost, and if we can't trust them, they should not have these viruses? And why are we disseminating this to laboratories all over the world so that they can work to create new and deadly forms of disease as a form of mass killing? Doesn't make any sense, or maybe it does, but go right ahead, Bill.
Well, one of the tip-offs in this whole thing is that we have Homeland Security and not one hint of the word bioterrorist. Now, if you had a very odd accumulation of these four strains of flu, you would think, well, somebody aggregated them together, somebody did this, we'd be talking about bioterrorism. Why, not a hint that they're even thinking about it. Why not? It certainly looks like that. This didn't occur naturally, and it seems to be geographically centered around Mexico City. And the response to this in the world, by the way, Scotland also ordered rehearsals for flu pandemic before all this was announced by the World Health Organization. I'll try to look up the date for you when that was released out. It's in a timeline that I'm writing. But, you know, trying to see how all this is unfolding. New Zealand said they had 10 students came back from Mexico that were highly likely to be infected with an influenza A strain virus, and said they will instigate a full emergency response structure on Monday. This was on Sunday, as they prepare for a potential swine flu pandemic. What are you talking about? On a highly likely, unconfirmed? I mean, this just doesn't make any sense. So you have countries over-responding. We've had swine flu. You've had swine flu cases in humans over the last 10 years. Not too many in the United States here recently. The measures that they're suggesting that we would do to protect from this, wash our hands, wear masks, all these are the largely ineffective measures. And largely what we want to know is, how do we improve immunity? All we have are these worthless Tamiflu-type drugs. And it's expensive, not practical for world populations. I don't know what the stockpile is there in Mexico, but most of the people couldn't afford it. And so we have something where we ought to be giving vitamin D pills. You ought to be stocking up on vitamin D. I think there will be a worldwide shortage in vitamin D pills. If you're one of those people who has learned that vitamin D boosts your immunity, triggers and activates your macrophages and neutrophils, your white blood cells, to respond to infection, then, of course, that's what we're trying to share with Mexico. I was on the phone with Mexican authorities tonight trying to tell them the whole story about vitamin D and what they need. We're trying to get this around the government because we know probably the powers that be, the United States and others, will block any such effort. But, you see, hospitals and doctors' offices in Mexico are working regionally without very many resources. Vitamin D is just a 10-cent cure, and it could be that we get them the right information. They'll just take action on their own, realizing that their populations are simply at risk. So we're trying to get around some of these efforts sometimes to stop this thing. If you recall, our own country sent Al Gore to South Africa just to stop a generic AIDS drug that was there because we didn't want it interrupting our patents. And, of course, we wouldn't want this thing to, interrupt our sale of Tamiflu all over the world, as now we see this drug. And remember now, Tamiflu was developed by Gilead Pharmaceuticals. Don Rumsfeld was the president. And, of course, eventually it's now being marketed by Roche and manufactured by them. And then other drug companies also sell it. So the action of Tamiflu, one of the actions, is a neuraminidase inhibitor. Now, neuraminidase is an enzyme, and it helps as the virus approaches your living cells. It has to go into the cell and use our printing press, our genetic material, to make copies of itself. This is how the viruses begin to make millions and billions of copies. And in order to get in the cell, the cell docks up and has a little protein or enzyme called neuraminidase, and that drills a hole into
the wall of our cells. Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
America, land that I love.
Dr. Stan, and you go right ahead, Bill.
Well, certainly we've been going over all of this scenario here. We've been talking how to boost immunity. I've been trying to explain how viruses enter your cellular machinery. Viruses are really not totally live germs like a bacterium or a fungus. They need your cells to replicate themselves. So they get into our genetic machinery. In order to get into the cell, they have to drill a little hole in the wall or the membrane of your cells. They do that with an enzyme called neuraminidase. The Tamiflu drug is a neuraminidase inhibitor. Now, it turns out that natural molecules you find in nature, found in red wine, resveratrol, you've heard about that on this show before, quercetin, also found in red onions, red apples, those are natural enzyme inhibitors, or that is, neuraminidase inhibitors. So if you'd like a natural way to get there, just trying to give you some idea of how to make all this happen for you so that you can try to figure this out. There will never be, there's only enough doses of Tamiflu, I think, in the United States. There's quite a few million doses, but it's only enough for 5 million people or so. I think they have 50 million doses, but you see, people take about 10 doses. So it just isn't, you know, enough for really anybody. They're just, of course, it's cost millions of dollars and all that. One of the interesting things, I'm writing a follow-up report. So if you want what I'm talking about tonight online, just go on your browser to Google, type in Bill Sardi, S-A-R-D-I, and swine flu, and you'll see somebody has posted one of my reports. I don't have a website up at the moment, but one of the interesting things I'm doing in a follow-up report is to try to help the public understand just exactly how virologists, these scientists that deal with viruses, how they think. And they have an assumptions in their thinking in this whole outbreak. One of them is that epidemics arise every 68 years. The other one is that a bird or swine flu viruses may be combined with human viruses, therefore making them more virulent. This is true, and this is what they think has happened, though it seems to be intentionally engineered. Number three, the mortality rate is unusually high. We don't see that here yet. But one of the very interesting things is that part of their rationale for this whole thing is that they believe, and this comes from Dr. John James, excuse me, James Robertson.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here, Bill. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Bill Sardi. If you have access to a computer, I'd simply suggest you go to your search engine and type in Bill Sardi, S-A-R-D-I, Bill Sardi, and then swine flu influenza. You'll actually get his article he put up a couple of days ago, and I'm sure that he's updating that, and this new article that will be here probably, what, in the next day or so?
Yes, I'm just working on it now.
All right, fine. So you go. This is the best way to get it if you don't have an access to a computer. Why, of course, we'd be glad to send you a copy. But if you get into the other items we talk about, just ask for a copy of Bill's article. But it is available on the Internet. Just with your search engine, Bill Sardi, or just Sardi, and then swine influenza. But go right ahead, Bill.
Well, what we have is this Dr. James Robertson at the Sheffield Vaccine Center. It's a center in the United Kingdom, and he's a very influential, very well connected in vaccine circles. This is what, of course, Leonard Horowitz, Dr. Horowitz has pointed out, is some of these connections, and of course he first alerted us to this. One of the thinking in the minds of virologists like Dr. Robertson is that a impending pandemic is going to occur. It's inevitable, and it's going to kill millions. But that we should maybe expose populations now to, of course, something that would give them partial immunity or full immunity when the big one comes. So in Dr. Robertson's own words, he explains that stockpiles of live vaccines with the cleavage site removed, they've done some genetic things to remove this little thing so it wouldn't be as virulent, could be used to, quote, prime the population in advance of a pandemic reaching the world. What he's talking about there is the very thing that we're alleging, that they have in mind of intentionally exposing the entire world population under the guise that it would protect them from the big one that would come behind it. And so under this, you've got license to commit murder. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, this is just beyond belief. It's in written words. We're trying to cite it all for you. Dr. Horowitz certainly alerted us to some of these connections. And of course, there's now an idea that they have a vaccine, which is not completely a vaccine. It's little snippets of genetic material from these various viruses. Novavax is the one making it of interest. Just exactly when this whole thing erupts, the swine flu epidemic is announced out of Mexico, Novavax issues a press release saying they just published a paper. Isn't that interesting? Showing how effective their near vaccine worked. It's not a vaccine that would give you long-term immunity, but it would boost your immunity because your body would see it coming, think it was a virus, and start activating macrophages, neutrophils, white blood cells to go attack the enemy. Well, the issue here is that's exactly what vitamin D does. That's exactly what vitamin C does. These other things can be used, but Novavax is trying to promote this. All of a sudden, they have a time study that just gets published coincidentally at the exact right time and is issued in the very early day or two of this whole thing. So it's just as if it was orchestrated. It certainly does look orchestrated, and it looks like everybody's complicit in this whole thing. Now, they did bring up that it's middle-aged, younger adults, not the very, very young children and not the elderly. The children don't have a developed immune system. The elderly have a compromised immune system. It's the younger adults in Mexico that are dying off, and that's what's got them concerned because that is the exact profile of the 1918 Spanish flu outbreak. But our soldiers went to war in 1918. They came back from World War I. They got tuberculosis overseas. They were coughing. There were no antibiotics. They were living with it. Then came the flu of 1918, the flu, a virus, the bacterium, a mycoplasma tuberculosis in the lung. And, of course, there you had two infections, and then a lot of people succumbed to this. In other parts of the world, most of the deaths of the 50 million that died in the world in 1918 were outside this country. I believe 50,000 or something like that died here. It wasn't a huge number, but it was certainly a large enough, and certainly regrettable. But nonetheless, you could see even here that a better off population, certainly the Pure Food and Drug Act, I think, was in place at that time. And so we had a more survivability from this outbreak here, even in our country. But they're concerned because it looks like this one has the same profile by the age groups. Well, it was explained in 1918 because it was our young soldiers coming back and maybe giving the tuberculosis to their wives and so on, and they were the ones that then succumbed to their family and so on. So that's how that worked. We didn't have antibiotics or anything in 1918, so this was a different world at the time. So the Novavax vaccine, they're working on an intranasal one, so it wouldn't have to be injected. It would just be in a nasal passage and so on. So this is what they're trying to do. It all seems to be a commercialized, orchestrated event, and, of course, we're just caught off guard as to what to do. And regardless of how I dismiss it and say you're probably not going to succumb to anything like this as long as you're in a well-fed population, have your immune system working well. But we must remember there's a lot of asthmatics and people on certain drugs and elderly people in nursing homes and so on that may have diabetics that have a compromised immune system. So we do want to learn what to do about it. And they've left us empty-handed until we get symptoms, and then you're to run for the Tamiflu, which only shortens the course at the end. What you want to do is shorten the course at the beginning. And so this is what you attempt to do. That's what vitamin D does, is rally your immune system the very beginning of a threat. The problem is the viruses are replicating faster then your immune system makes white blood cells in the first 3 days of a common cold caused by adenoviruses or other types of infections. So you want to speed that up. You do that with vitamin D, and that's why it's so very, very important to you. And certainly anybody listening tonight, I would stock up with a year's supply of vitamin D. It's very inexpensive, and I believe there's going to be a world rush on this eventually. I don't believe, you see, what's happening is that the vaccine makers have made the vaccine for next year's flu. And so they're going to finish up with that very soon. So next year's flu season, already made by the vaccine makers, that will give them time now to start making a vaccine for this one. Well, that'll take at least 3 to 6 months. I believe it's more like the 6 month time. There are some companies saying they have technology that could be make the vaccine in 3 weeks, but these are unproven vaccines. So what we're going to have, and by the way, the Novavax vaccine-like product has never been used in humans either, but if people start dying off like flies, they'll then gain license to get it on the market and don't have to go through all the approvals and do that in a foreign country that really doesn't apply to us. So that's why these companies are interested. They get a lot of their funding under the idea that bioterrorism and we need them to help us in these kind of things, and so they don't even have to raise all the money for their companies, and they get it from government, and then they have a cozy relationship with people in government to declare, well, of course, pandemics so that their products can be sold. And that's how this relationship runs. My second article on this is how to stage a flu pandemic, and then I just tell everybody how they're doing it. So it's important for us to know the mechanisms. It'll relieve us a little bit what they're doing. But nonetheless, everybody's anxious, and the flu may come, and you may get it and not even know it and just go on with your life. But nonetheless, people have anxiety over this, and that's why I'm trying in between the lines to tell you about things you can do. And, of course, garlic and oregano, these are all a crushed clove of garlic makes allicin. It's a 10-cent cure, and allicin kills off viruses. And you need to crush the garlic clove as much as you can. Wait about 5 minutes and try to take that down. It's very pungent. You might need to put it with something else, but it's a very strong antidote to viruses and so on. You only want to do that when you're really starting to get sick. But, you know, the swine flu vaccine, it might be months away is what they're saying. And so the world is left empty-handed here. And we really don't have any other good ways to do anything, and yet not a word about vitamins, not a word about building your immune system in any way. And so this is kind of what you have, is the world health authorities acting like there's nothing you can do but sit and wait till you get it and then try Tamiflu. So that's not true. And, of course, this is just what we learn. This is what their typical modus operandi is in dealing with these outbreaks of the flu. And this one, of course, seems to be manipulated and invented. So we're just trying to give you some of the ideas of how to deal with it emotionally, and information really counts here. As you know, we now see non-medically trained people. This lady in charge of Homeland Security is certainly not a medical person, and yet she's up there. So she's talking about things that only somebody has told her. She doesn't know these things. So it's just something that somebody tells her. So, you know, it's important that we see that these politically and commercially manipulated people are calling for these things, such as a lockdown in our homes. People are worried about a mandated vaccine program to come in and roll up your sleeve and make you get it. They can't do it now. They don't have a vaccine. How they would get you to take the drugs, I don't know. Now, when they do have a vaccine, which might be in a few months, the vaccine manufacturers can start making this fairly soon, and they would be headed to sell it in South America, where the winter flu season would be coming there before ours here in, later in the year. So that's where this thing would be aimed, and this thing could be literally a weapon aimed at South America. I mean, this is what's coming. And so whether they lock down, prevent airplane flights, impoverish Mexico further, I don't know. I do know that people, the restaurants are closed in Mexico City. I talked to people there tonight. People are staying inside. That's the last thing to do. So we told Mexican authorities tonight to get out in the sunshine in the middle of the day, to get outside in the sun, make natural vitamin D. And, of course, we've learned that populations in the Mediterranean area don't seem to have the same level of infectious outbreaks, flu and so on, doesn't matter which disease it is, in infectious diseases, as the rest of the world. And we're not exactly sure why. They are a sunny population, closer to the equator than we are, and that's part of it. They get a little bit more vitamin D. But what we found through exquisite research being done, that it has to do with the molecules in their diet. And in what happens is that in sick cells, or cells that are malignant like cancer, there is a doorway, an entryway for vitamin D to get inside cells and do its job. And, of course, that vitamin D receptor site is what they call it. It's a doorway. Is weak and insensitive when you have sick cells that are infected by viruses, bacteria, or malignant like cancer. So it could be that the vitamin D never gets in the cell. Now, the way you sensitize the receptor for vitamin D on the surface of sick cells is red wine molecules, resveratrol, quercetin. And, of course, I even made a pill with vitamin D, resveratrol, quercetin, all those molecules all combined together. You sensitize the receptor because this is why the immune system gets defeated, is that the cancer cells, the germs themselves are creating a situation where the vitamin D can't work. So this is the way that you would activate the immune system properly. And the infectious rate throughout the Mediterranean is about 30% less than we see as occurring in the rest of the world. Have you heard about a flu outbreak throughout that Mediterranean area? You almost never hear about it. It's a little bit, but we don't have the same rate nor the mortality. And we think it's the combination of sunlight, vitamin D, and then, of course, these red wine molecules that are traditionally in the diet there. There are others, pomegranate, olive oil, and so on, that are similar, probably do the same thing. So it's the Mediterranean diet that seems to afford some protection against all this. So, of course, the whole world is concerned. People are worried about eating pork. So the poor pig growers, the pig farms are going to be, they're destroying all the pigs in Egypt as we speak. What they're going to do here, I don't know. It's a totally destroyed industry, it will be, as people are concerned. You're cooking meat, it'll be destroyed, it won't be there. But about 30% of the swine, the pigs in the United States already have this. Nobody's been coming down with swine flu. But now, because it's in the news media, of course, we're concerned, and people are going to back away from eating pork. So we're going to have a destruction of an industry on top of all this. So, and all of this is just an overreaction. It does seem to be orchestrated. We're going to learn more. Some people are catching on. Some people are knowledgeable enough to see that this is a contrived situation and being manipulated by a joint partnership behind the scenes between politicians and vaccine makers and world health authorities and so on. So we see this whole thing unfolding. So I'm sure some of you have some questions about all this. We're trying to anticipate your questions, try to give you some of the answers. There's questions about, should you get on an airplane with a mask and these kind of things? All I can say is get some vitamin D, build your defense, because I never get on an airplane without taking some vitamin D and some quercetin, and make sure when you're traveling you do that, because there's a bigger threat that you would get tuberculosis from somebody on the plane traveling from a foreign country than there is that you would get the swine flu, and that's been there all along. And so the tuberculosis is a lung airborne infection, is transmitted from person to person, and you could be sitting right next to the person who has tuberculosis. It gets in the air system of the airplane and then can contaminate many, and so then you become TB positive, you've been exposed, and so on. Whether you develop the disease depends on your immune system, so you want to keep that charged up.
Well, Bill, why don't you just mention the telephone number where if anybody's interested in contacting you about the resveratrol, which incidentally I've taken for a long time.
You know, this wasn't meant as a commercial tonight. I did develop a pill called Longevinix. It has the vitamin D and resveratrol, quercetin, all those molecules. If you do want to talk to me or find out more, 866-405-4000, 866-405-4000. But this gives people some idea of how to approach this, gives them an idea of some 10-cent cures they can use at home, and to breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief. So I think we're all dismayed that our country's being taken away from us, and we just really have no idea what they're up to. Now we'll have to wait day by day to see.
And, Chrissy, you pick up the paper in this, every article, things are worse. It's spreading, you know, soon it's going to be every place, all throughout the world. You know, one case in Denmark, you
it's
know what that means?
It's not the flu, it's our government that I'm dismayed over.
We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, Bill, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
I would certainly like to know how in the world that 747 airplane with the two F-16s that flew at 10 o'clock in the morning, the exact time of the day of 9/11.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
They're playing games with our minds. Is there an epidemic? Probably there is. How bad will it be? Well, we know that it's already spread to America. The one child died. Just happened to be a Mexican child who was brought to America because it was so ill and they were trying to get treatment for it. But they planted that idea in your mind. And remember, of course, it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and convincingly enough, and the president's talking about it, and, of course, he told us what to do, we're to cover our mouths with our hands when we cough. We're to wash our hands frequently. That's how we'll approach the epidemic. Well, certainly I will tell you what we here at our family do, and that is if we start to come down with influenza, the flu bug, or cold, why we actually have vitamin D3, which we take actually one of those every 4 hours, and two alibiotic. Alibiotic is simply a product which comes out from one of the major health products here. It's I won't name it, but if you look at our label, RL label, you'll know who manufactures it for us. But it contains oil of oregano, allicin, which is the active ingredient in garlic. It contains elderberry juice, elderberry extract, and a couple of other things. They're herbal extracts, which really do seem to help. Now, I can't tell you that the FDA has approved this, but I will tell you that I and my family, when we start to come down with it, why we take two alibiotic capsules and one vitamin D, and we take that every 4 hours until we get feeling better, and we may get 20 or 30, 1,000 units of vitamin D a day, and you can do that for several days and not getting any problems. The main thing is you want to mobilize your immune system. And of course, vitamin C along with that, up to the point where you begin to get a little looseness in your bowel movements, will do a lot to help mobilize your immune system. And that's what you really want to do. Cindy, you have to understand that we certainly are facing diseases all the time. We have to keep our immune system primed. Certainly, if you look at these statistics, there's far less cancer in the southern parts of the United States and as you move down towards the equator. Why? Because the people are getting large doses of vitamin D. This is an amazing product. We've been told, I know when I went to medical school, everybody was concerned about vitamin D intoxication. Let me tell you that this will really help your level of your bones. It'll help your immune system. It truly is the miracle of the sunshine vitamin. So if you'd like more information, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Again, that's vitamin D3, and if you are coming down with something, 5,000 units, not 1,000 units. The NIH says, 1,000 units a day, and that is totally inadequate, and this is one reason why we have so much disease. So many of the things that the government comes out with are, of course, counterproductive. Why would they tell us things that are counterproductive? Well, there's a population control agenda. If you haven't seen my talk on the planned population reduction, the DVD's available. We have another one called None Dare Call It Genocide. We have another one called Population Control. You can actually go up on the Internet and type in the Population Control Agenda monograph. People have posted my treatise up there. You can get it off our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Pull down the Population Control Agenda monograph, or if you get any of our products, we'll be glad to send you a free copy of it. It'll go into the background of the fact that there really are people out there who want to drastically reduce the number of people in the world. Why do you think the government for years was subsidizing tobacco? Do you think that they didn't know it was killing people? Of course they knew it was killing people. Why do you think that they were so anxious to get abortion through and to encourage our young girls to be promiscuous and go ahead and get pregnant? Because, well, then they have to have an abortion. There really are people out there who believe in euthanasia. Why do you think we outlawed DDT, which brought back malaria with a vengeance throughout the world? Well, our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But the battle for the survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend Patrick Wood. And Patrick Wood is, of course, with the August Review back in the late 1970s. Patrick was working very closely with our good friend, Professor Anthony Sutton, who, of course, had been at the Hoover Institute, but, of course, lost his position there because he dared go before the Republican nominating committee at the Republican convention. It was back in 1972, and explain and talk about how, of course, America was helping the Russians, were helping the North Vietnamese, were killing our boys, and the American people were never supposed to understand that Vietnam was a totally phony war. We were funding the Russians, we're funding the North Vietnamese, we're funding the Viet Cong, or we're killing our boys. So if, like in Afghanistan today, where we fund the Pakistan government that funds the ISI, their intelligence, that funds the Taliban that are killing our boys in Afghanistan, nothing is ever as it purports to be. But, of course, you cannot understand what's going on behind the scenes unless you understand the things that Professor Sutton and Patrick were working on in the late 1970s, and that is the Trilateral Commission, the organization that, according to Senator Barry Goldwater, was established to actually control the financial and commercial elements by seizing control of the government of the United States. Well, I'm going to let Patrick tell you. He's got some great new reports out. You'll certainly want to get his information. Patrick, thanks so very much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome, Dr. Stan. Good to be here.
You go ahead and pick up the story.
Well, you covered it pretty well. We started, Anthony Sutton and myself started this chase back in the 1970s, and we sounded the alarm back then over this particular group of people who were the apparently the movers and shakers behind the Carter administration. And not too many people listened to us back then, although we did sell quite a few books and quite a few newsletters. But, you know, things didn't work out quite like we hoped. The right people didn't listen to us, I guess, you might say. And the Trilateral Commission stayed in power. They still are in power today with the Obama administration. And they continue to have a virtual lock, you know, hammer lock on our foreign policy mechanism and our economic mechanism as well.
I think that's the thing that everybody honestly believes, that President Obama is going to bring change, but he's put the same people into positions of power that were there during the Bush administration, and then, of course, during the Clinton administration, and then, of course, in the first Bush administration under Ronald Reagan, and certainly under Jimmy Carter. This small little clique of people with, according to you know, Patrick, there's only 87 United States citizens or U.S. citizens in this little group, the North American group of the Trilateral Commission. There are about 120 there altogether, but some of them are Canadians, some of them are Mexicans. Only 87 citizens, and they have almost 10 of them in key positions, and they totally dominate the American State Department today. We're going to get a change, but I think it's going to be a change for the worse. Go right ahead.
Well, it is a change for the worse. I guess you say the downhill race is accelerating, but there's as many members of the Trilateral Commission right now in Obama's government already that there's been in virtually every other administration. Jimmy Carter actually took the prize, I think, with close to 30% of the membership that he swept into a top position in his administration.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. 30% of the members of the Trilateral Commission were in the Carter administration. You go right ahead.
Well, today we have, you know, we were promised, of course, change and, you know, a new America and so on, but it's just more of the same. I'm just reminded that Jimmy Carter's marketing phrase back in his election cycle in 75 was, "I will never lie to you." I remember that just so clearly that he just the words just flowed off his lips. "I will never lie to you," and people bought it, and they put this man in, and that, he didn't do anything except lie to us after he got elected. I don't know that he ever told the truth. But we have the same type of MO with Barack Obama this time around. He had heavy support of the Trilateral Commission members. He was tutored by Zbigniew Brzezinski, who also tutored Jimmy Carter. And once he was elected president, as I said, he has since appointed almost 10% of the U.S. membership today to top-level positions, including, for instance, the Secretary of the Treasury, Tim Geithner, the Ambassador of the United Nations, Susan Rice. I'm sure we'll go over some of these, I'm sure, in the program tonight. But these members of the Trilateral Commission, the thing that's alarming about this, Dr. Stan, is the policies they are implementing are not American policies. They're globalistic policies that were determined at plenary sessions of the Trilateral Commission, which include members from Asia, from Japan, from around North America, Canada, Mexico, including the U.S., and from Europe. And these are not policies that were established in the United States. They have no root or basis in the United States whatsoever. They completely bypass the Constitution. They bypass the Senate and the House. Yet they have been able, over a period of 30-plus years now, to implement their agenda. And the results of that agenda, Dr. Stan, is what we have today. This system of globalization is so thoroughly broken that the whole world is going under right now, and these people are at the root of it.
You are absolutely right. And this thing is that the average individual has no idea what's going on because the establishment pundits, whether they be on the so-called conservative side or so-called on the liberal side, and they argue back and forth and they put on a great show, but it's only a show. They're never going to tell you what's really going on. And this is why you need alternative media. That's why you need programs like Radio Liberty. We're going to hear what you won't hear elsewhere. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Certainly our guest this evening is Patrick Wood, and he's talking about the Trilateral Commission influence on the Obama administration. There are only 87 people in the American citizens, I should say, in the North American group. There are about 300 people in the Trilateral Commission altogether, but they come from all over the world. They're the people who really rule the world. And of that 87 people, at least I can think of 10, who are now in key positions in the Obama regime. They're going to control the State Department. They are the financial advisors to the president. They're the people who got us into this mess, and the same people who got us into this mess are going to be the people that he's going to rely upon to get us out of this mess. And the thing is that they're not going to do anything right because they don't want to solve the problem. They are going to use the problem to bring about a world government. But we cannot tell the stupid American people that. They've got to think that when we spend all these, you know, hundreds of billions of trillions of dollars, we're approaching at the present time about $10 trillion they put out so far, and if you doubt that, you need to get my November newsletter, November 2008 Radio Liberty letter. It's up on the website at radioliberty.com. And look at the Federal Reserve figures on the money that's been put out, and they put out, well, pretty close, between $9 and $10 trillion when this new bill goes through, this new $819 billion are going to put out. But tell me, you know, how are we going to benefit the economic crisis by putting up a couple of $100 million for a control of sexually transmitted diseases, or certainly financing voter registration and community action groups? How is that going to solve the economic problems that are destroying our nation? And the answer is, it's not going to. But you have to believe that they're doing something. And, of course, what they're really doing is making things worse, aiming at destroying the value of our currency, impoverishing our people. Why would intelligent people do that? Why? Because we're dealing with extremely intelligent people who have a different worldview. But, Patrick, you pick up the story.
Well, they do have a different worldview, Stan. And the deal with the policies that they've clearly delineated over the years, they're leading us towards a globalistic system that combines the economies of the world into a single economy and the governance of the world into a single body of governance, with them at the top. And this, I can't say that this has been 100% implemented yet, because the American people and the country of America are still a thorn in the side of these people. We are the last country in the world, you realize, that has freedom written into its constitution. And we have preserved liberty in our country longer than any other country on the face of the planet. And you cannot find a country anywhere in the world that's the likes of America. And America has been in the crosshairs of these people, because until America is removed from the global scene, they cannot accomplish their global system. And that's why we've seen the attacks on manufacturing and the attacks on our borders, for instance, leaving our borders open, encouraging illegal immigration. And, you know, we've seen sovereignty slip away with treaties that have been signed and trade agreements that have been signed, our submission to the International Court of Justice, to the World Trade Organization, and so on. They're targeting our country for extinction, quite honestly.
Well, you know, I think it's, any intelligent person, I would simply ask them, why is America giving a great deal of money in foreign aid to Africa and other nations throughout the world? You know, when we're having to borrow money every single day to pay our debts. I mean, what do you think it would be rational if you certainly were, you know, head over heels in debt and having to borrow money every day, to be giving money away to people in other countries? Or to your friends, you'd say that's illogical. Why are we encouraging our manufacturing to move overseas by giving them special tax breaks and subsidies and guarantees that if their country, if their factories are nationalized, why, we'll pick up the tab? Why would logical people want to move America's manufacturing out of Russia and to China and to Brazil and to Mexico, which is exactly where it's going? And that's where, of course, General Motors is opening its plants. It's just opened a new plant in Russia. It's opening its eighth plant in China. It has opening up a new whole complex in Brazil to work with all the other plants it has down there. And then, of course, the American Congress is going to give it more money so it can continue operating here. It doesn't intend to continue operating here. What we're going to do is subsidize General Motors move overseas, and we all give them special tax breaks. They don't have to pay taxes when the corporations are overseas. They don't pay any American taxes. And then, of course, the other countries can subsidize their exports. We don't do that. We have our open borders, and the whole idea is to destroy the manufacturing base of this country, to ship our money and our wealth overseas, redistribution of wealth, and then, of course, to flood our country with illegal immigrants who will take the jobs and drive, of course, the wage levels down. But the average American finds it so difficult to believe this is going on, and yet look and see what's happening. Of course this is what's going on, isn't it, Patrick?
It is, and it appears to be unstoppable at this point. We've discussed the North American continent before, and the designs that these people have on the North American continent, which include Canada and Mexico. When as America declines in you know, in prestige as a nation, you have the cheap imports, the cheap raw materials that are available in Canada, with a very, very inexpensive labor force in Mexico moving northward, and these resources will meet the labor at some point in time, in the middle of the United States, and create, potentially for them, create a revolution in manufacturing and wealth production that will basically use, completely, impoverished labor, much like they've done in China. China is a land of very inexpensive raw materials and very, very inexpensive labor. And that's why it was so attractive to these people to move manufacturing facilities over there and ship it back to us. And they have no problem dealing with communist nations, because you don't have any people to shake hands with. You make a deal with the dictator, and that's it. That's why Russia was, or the USSR was always a favorable place for these people to do business. You didn't have to negotiate with too many people. Yes, you had to bribe a few people, but it was easy to work in a communist nation. And so America is being set up economically to mimic the Chinese experience, and perhaps even the Soviet experience, where you have inexpensive resources and inexpensive labor working to produce wealth for a very select few of people who are sitting at the top of the pyramid. And that's exactly where we're headed.
And we basically, I think people have to understand we have two governments. We have the visible government. That's where we elect our representatives, and they go to Washington, D.C., and they give talks and speeches, and then they have votes on legislation. They pass the legislation. And, of course, those are the laws of our land, and supposedly they're being enforced, except they're not really enforced for specific the elite. Tom Daschle, what did he have, $100,000+ in taxes? And Timothy Geithner had, what, $30,000, got up to about $44,000 with the fines that he knew he was supposed to pay. But the elite don't pay their taxes, ladies and gentlemen. The elite don't abide by the same laws. Why? Because Tom Daschle is a member of the Trilateral Commission. Timothy Geithner is a member of the Trilateral Commission. I mean, these people know exactly how the world works, and of course they work in conjunction with the leaders of the Trilateral Commission. They think nothing at all of executing or certainly of killing other world leaders. The CIA does that. Well, they don't do it themselves. They hire other people to do it. I've talked to at least four professional assassins here, and a number of the people I've interviewed have been actually killed. These things really do go on in the world today. There is an elite, and of course it works primarily through the Trilateral Commission, but then a Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderbergers, Group of 30. But behind them are powerful spiritual forces, which everybody has missed who's talked about this. But, I mean, I'm sure that Patrick recognizes the spiritual forces that energizes this move towards the world government. Well, Patrick, you've got some great reports out recently, and you want to tell us a little bit about your global strategy report? Go ahead.
Well, Dr. Stan, I recently started a new service called Geostrategic Trends, which is found at geostrategictrends.com. And August Review is... by the nature of its name, is a backward-looking, body of knowledge that reviews history as to how we got to where we are today. That's why we've been writing about the Trilateral Commission for all these years. And people ask me continually, well, given what we see in the past, how can we protect ourselves against the future? You know, what can we do to either change the situation, or if we can't change it, how can we protect ourselves and our assets and our loved ones and so on? And so I was encouraged to start this new service, Geostrategic Trends, as an inexpensive subscription service, which is specifically looks forward in time to try and predict and analyze what's coming down the line at us. And it's a different perspective, a lot of the same material, a lot of the same players, but it's a different perspective, looking forward instead of backwards. And it's not for everybody to need to look forwards, but, you know, there's a smattering of political, there's a smattering of economics, there's a smattering of market analysis, and so on, that I hope will help, you know, people that need that kind of help to stay out of harm's way. And like you said, the American people have been asleep at the switch for so long, they don't have the tools to analyze this stuff themselves. So, you know, given that we deal with all this information on a daily basis, it made a lot of sense just to try and put it in a different venue, and that's how I started geostrategictrends.com.
All right, fine. And what are they going to find out if they do subscribe to Geostrategic Trends? In other words, what you're going to tell them of what's going to be happening financially, what's be happening politically, what are you going to be covering?
Well, everything is of interest to me, I would say.
All right.
It's my brain and my fingers that are doing the typing. Whatever is important to me, I put it in.
All right.
I've written a lot about global unrest recently, about the riots that have been happening in France, Russia, and Iceland, and even in Davos, Switzerland this weekend.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Patrick, go ahead and pick up the story.
And I've written a lot about the economy, what's going on with the banking system, with manufacturing. I've written a lot about the equities markets, the stock market, not only here in the United States, but also other markets around the world as well, like in Europe and Japan and so on. I've written quite a bit about precious metals, gold and silver. I'm going to write in the future a fair amount probably just about survival issues. What kinds of things do you need to have on hand and so on to survive what's coming? And it's not a, I tell you, it doesn't give me a lot of pleasure to write this kind of stuff, Dr. Stan, but, you know, it's a necessary thing. And these are the days that we live in. We can't change it. It's reality. We need to face it head on and deal with it the best we can. And that's about all I can say to people. You know, I say I don't have all the magic, you know, answers, but a lot of stuff we can see happening. You know, for instance, I'm thoroughly convinced that that we're going to have a civil unrest by summer of this year in this country that will absolutely shock the majority of Americans that this could even happen in the United States. And I think we're going to see in several cities around the country riots in the street where people are just absolutely going berserk. California might lead the way on that, by the way, because California is now broke, and they have decided to withhold you know, tax payments and so on. And you live there, you know this very well, I know, but tax refunds are going to be withheld for a period of time. They may issue vouchers, IOUs to vendors that the state owes money to, and heaven forbid if they withhold even one welfare payment from somebody who is entitled, you know, feels like they're entitled to welfare, there will be riots in the street. It's coming. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that I'm concerned with. I look at, you know, I just look at what's going on, you know, it's not too difficult to see the handwriting on the wall in a lot of situations. I just want to pass that on to people. In the meantime, I have to say, Dr. Stan, I'm very disturbed that I cannot, that I'm having very little success convincing people, intelligent people, who are not on the, you know, the side of the globalists necessarily, but convincing people that the Trilateral Commission is at the core of that which has happened to us in the last 10 years or so. I just, you know, people just will not accept this, and it's very disturbing. Even when given completely documented evidence that this is true, they still will not acknowledge the truth about it.
Well, you know, I think that reading your material where you point out the number of secretaries of state that come from the Trilateral Commission, remember there has never been even 100 Americans who are in this organization, and yet you'll find that almost the Secretary of State almost always comes from the Trilateral Commission. The Secretary of the Treasury almost always comes from the Trilateral Commission. The head of the World Bank, which controls a large part of the world economy, almost always comes from the membership roles of this little less than 100 people, 87 people right now, Americans in this organization. And certainly the people are a world, the world trade emissaries, the world the people who control world trade. Now, you know, they always come from the same little group. I mean, how could this just happen by accident? And of course, all we have to do is go back and read what Barry Goldwater said. The purpose was to take over the government of the United States, and they've done it. And well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest, Patrick Wood, was saying, you know, how most people cannot really believe the Trilateral Commission has the power that it does and is really able to do what it really does, and that is to control the leadership of both political parties. But, I mean, certainly you look and see who they're by, the people who control Newsweek magazine, Time magazine, U.S. News and World Report. I mean, how could they all belong to this one little group with only less than 100 members? Is that why, of course, Barack Obama's picture was repeatedly on the front of Newsweek magazine and Time magazine? How many times was he on Newsweek? How many times was his face or his picture on the cover of Time? It's just unbelievable how they primed the American people to believe that here was a chance to bring real change, and yet, of course, here was one of their clones.
I suppose if a statistician set about calculating the odds of a group of people like this, you know, keeping these positions or having these positions over a period of 30 years, I don't think that a statistician would have enough zeros in their computer to calculate the odds of this happening.
By accident.
By accident. It would be so infinitesimal as to not even be measurable. And they've done this now for 35 years, starting with Jimmy Carter. And like you said, they've dominated you know, somebody said to me, well, name me one Trilateral Commissioner who was Secretary of HUD. You know, who cares about HUD? Who cares about the social issues? They have dominated all of the trade and economic positions. They've dominated all of the money positions. They've dominated all of the foreign policy positions, and they've dominated the Secretary of Defense, the defense mechanism in our country. These are the positions that were important to them, and these are the only ones that they've gone after. The rest of them, they just, you know, basically they just scoff at. And so that's why we see 9 out of 12 Secretaries of Defense have been from this group, and 7 out of 12 Secretaries of State. And the Vice President and or President of every administration has been involved with this group, save Obama and Biden, by the way. But as I said, they've already appointed 10 members of the Trilateral Commission to top posts. You've got 8 out of 10 of the U.S. trade representatives that negotiate all these crazy treaties we've had, agreements that we've had in the last 20, 30 years. And as he said, 6 out of 8 of the World Bank presidents, including the current one, Robert Zoellick, who is a member. And you've got all these people that are exercising influence on these critical areas to our country, and nobody has paid attention to them. They just give them a free pass in every instance. And I have to say, I won't mention any names, but I have to say, even well-known conservative journalists who have been writing about these people and writing about some of these things for many, many years, they will not mention that these people. I read an article just today or yesterday about Tim Geithner, and it just ripped Geithner up one side and down the other. But this particular journalist would not mention that he was a member of the Trilateral Commission.
He's not only a member of the Trilateral Commission, he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, he's a member attends the Bilderberger meetings, he's a member of the Group of 30, and the Group of 30, at least 6 of them come from the Trilateral Commission, a little group, of course, that directs the finances of the world. And people don't understand that these people are in total control. There's just this very small group. And here's this man who, of course, cheated on his income tax, quite obviously. Now he's going to be in charge of the IRS, you know, as Secretary of the Treasury. What madness is that? But nobody ever points those things out.
Well, I know. So, yeah, we probably ought to look at some of these people. I'd like your listeners to know who Obama's appointed to some of these top positions so far. We've talked about Timothy Geithner already, he is not a banker, by the way. People are mistaking him to think that he's like a Henry Paulson. Tim Geithner is a career bureaucrat. He happens to have worked in the finance area, but he is the wonder boy, if you will, of the Trilateral Commission. He's only 47 years old. He's risen up through the ranks in a short career since college.
And of course, wasn't he very closely affiliated with that great American patriot, Henry Kissinger, who recently called for a chance for a new world order? Right ahead.
We have Susan Rice, who is Ambassador to the United Nations. And, of course, the United Nations would like to subvert the U.S. Under its into its control. And you have the National Security Advisor, which is the equivalent position of what Zbigniew Brzezinski held with Jimmy Carter. That position has been assigned to Thomas Donilon, a member of the Trilateral Commission.
No, he's the Deputy Secretary, the National Security Advisor. Its main one is James Jones, is it? General James Jones? We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest, of course, is Patrick Wood. Isn't it General Jones is the National Security Advisor and Thomas Donilon is the deputy?
Unless this has been changed just recently, Donilon, in my research here, Donilon has a position of National Security Advisor.
Then I stand corrected. Go ahead.
You also have Admiral Dennis Blair, who is Director of National Intelligence, Blair is a member of the Trial Audit Commission as well. As far as I'm concerned, these two positions, Director of National Intelligence and the National Security Advisor, essentially control the intelligence establishment in the United States between the two of them, and they're both members of the Trial Audit Commission. You have the chairman of the Economic Recovery Committee, which is Obama's top committee to figure out how to bail a country out of the economic turmoil that it's in right now. The chairman of the Economic Recovery Committee is Paul Volcker, who is a member, and he, of course, was appointed as chairman of the Fed by Jimmy Carter originally. He was succeeded by Alan Greenspan.
Who is a member of the Trilateral Commission?
Who's also the a member of the Trilateral
Council
Commission.
On Foreign Relations, right?
And then we have, in Secretary of State, we have people, we have five people that are associated with the State Department. You have Kirk Campbell. He's Assistant Secretary of State for Asia and the Pacific. James Steinberg is the Deputy Secretary of State. And then you have three special envoys that have been appointed. Envoys are special envoys are typically troubleshooters who get sent around anywhere that the head of the State Department tells them to go. That would be Hillary Clinton, of course, whose husband, Bill Clinton, is a member of the Trial Audit Commission. And then these special envoys are our good old friends Richard Haass, Dennis Ross, and Richard Holbrooke. Richard Haass, of course, is president of the CFR, as well as being a member of the Trial Audit Commission. So the State Department is absolutely stacked with these people. So foreign policy will continue, you know, who knows which way, but it's not going to be for the benefit of the American people. You have a number of people, of kind of oblique associations with the Trial Audit Commission as well. Dr. Stan, for instance, you have Geithner's kind of informal kitchen cabinet, if you will, a small advisory group. Several people have been in this group over the years, consistently, of course. You've had
hold that thought. Sure. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Patrick Wood, and we've just been talking about the people in key positions in the Obama regime who come from the Trilateral Commission. Susan Rice, the UN Secretary. Certainly, Mr. Donilon, a Deputy Secretary, or perhaps a National Security Advisor, and Admiral Blair, Director of Intelligence, and the people just Tom Daschle, of course, Secretary of Health and Human Services. Right down the list, Timothy Geithner, at least the four or five people in key positions of the State Department, all from the Trilateral Commission, and of course Hillary Clinton, whose husband's a member of the Trilateral Commission. So basically, the same people control the government. They controlled it under, of course, George Bush, controlled it under Bill Clinton, controlled it under the first Bush administration, Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter. Yeah, the change we're getting is going to be a change for the worse, because they're going to pursue these same policies of destroying our economic system. And this is what they want to do, destroy our economic system, impoverish the American people, but they can't let the American people know that. You've got to believe that all this money they're spending is an effort to solve the problem. But they're not trying to solve the problem. They're not, of course, going to buy up all of these bonds. They could have bought them up last October and stopped this. They had $700 billion, and they absolutely refused to do what was logical, to try to stop the cascading collapse of the housing market, knowing full well this was the major cause, because they'd worked so long to create the problem, and they certainly would not want to solve it until it had destroyed our economy and impoverished not only our people, but people throughout the world. Patrick, before we go on, will you go ahead and get out your website, how people can get in touch with you?
Oh, certainly, Dr. Stan. August Review is easy to remember. It's augustreview.com. And there's tons of material on the Trilateral Commission, the historical side of it. Our original book is there as well, Trilaterals Over Washington. And my premium site is geostrategictrends.com, looking forward. And everyone that subscribes to Geostrategic Trends automatically receives a 30-day trial subscription. And if they decide that they don't want to continue with it after 30 days, they just write me and say cancel. They don't pay a dime, so they don't risk anything initially to look at it for 30 days. I typically write three daily updates a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, covering a number of things, including the markets, including gold and silver, and other things that are interested in the news.
All right, fine. Well, Chris, why don't you go right ahead? You were talking about the Trilateral Commission influence on the government today. And, of course, I consider Patrick the world's leading expert on the Trilateral Commission and their influence on our government. And really, you have to look at and see what the influence they have on our State Department. They've had, going back to the time of Jimmy Carter, the influence they've had on the Department of Defense, the trade representatives, the World Bank, the Federal Reserve System. And three of the last chairmen of the Federal Reserve have come from the membership list of the Trilateral Commission. Could this happen by accident? Of course not. The purpose of the Trilateral Commission was to seize control of the government of the United States. They've been helped by the people who own, of course, the Washington Post and published Newsweek magazine. That's the Graham family, the fellow Graham. Now, of course, is a member of the Trilateral Commission. The people who controlled Time Warner, published Time magazine, they are members of the Trilateral Commission. Mr. Zuckerman, who publishes U.S. News and World Report. The people who control the media, and that's why, of course, you will never see this mentioned, because if you want to keep your job working for ABC, CBS, or NBC, you better never tell the American people the truth. Our telephone, well, go right ahead, Patrick.
I was just going to mention about Tim Geithner's informal advisory group. It's kind of like his personal board of directors, if you will, which is fairly common for people in Geithner's league. Some of his advisors who have met regularly with him for many years include Gerald Corrigan, Paul Volcker, Alan Greenspan, Peter G. Peterson, Henry Kissinger as well. His first job out of college was with Kissinger Associates, where he worked for 3 years. Geithner is a career bureaucrat, not a banker, but he is a Brzezinski type of a bureaucrat. Who is dedicated to a purpose. He's not, he doesn't come from industry, doesn't come from finance per se. But I would point out that Geithner, as head of the New York Fed, coming to take the Treasury position in our country, is tantamount to having the bank send in their representative to your failing company to take charge of the checkbook. And I view Geithner's appointment as much as a receivership operation that's being implemented to, which I think ultimately will pan out, will be the orderly distribution of assets in America to pay off the debt that America has accumulated over the last, quite a while, but especially in the last 8 to 10 years. We'll see. But normally you don't have somebody moving laterally from the Federal Reserve directly into Treasury. This is kind of a first, I believe.
Well, some people liken it, of course, to the fox being asked to guard the chicken coop, but I think of it more as the bear guarding the honey jar. But go right ahead.
Well, it could be that, too. But you see, the Federal Reserve is the exclusive banker to the United States government. And there's only the government and the Fed. There's one client and there's one bank. And that one bank is realizing quickly that its one client is over the edge, headed towards bankruptcy. And the best thing that a bank could do is to send their man and insist on it, even according to the terms of a loan agreement, to insist on placing one of their people in as the chief financial officer of that client.
But I think the thing that bothers me of what they're doing today, the people in the Fed, Ben Bernanke, apparently now is beginning just to create money and to buy up the Treasury notes, because certainly we're not getting as much. We have massive amounts to raise. They're talking about the national debt for this coming year is not going to be $1.3 trillion, as they say, probably closer to $2 trillion at least. And certainly we have to raised that money, and people are not putting that much money into T-bonds. And of course, there's talk about some other countries, the foreign countries, which have been subsidizing us for some time so we could keep spending. And, well, they've been sending their money over here to buy our T-bonds, but apparently they're cutting back on that. And of course, they're talking about the Fed actually just printing the money to buy the T-bonds to keep the game going. Have they started doing that yet? Have they started printing money to pay off, you know, so we can issue the T-bonds, so we can keep spending far more than we're taking in indefinitely?
Well, it can't go on indefinitely, and that's the whole point of insolvency. We are technically insolvent right now, but we continue to operate as a country. Our banking system, by the way, is technically insolvent as well. They have less assets or less capital than they have. They have a negative capital collectively, which means that the banking system is technically insolvent. And you ask, well, why is the government still operating, and why are the banks still operating? So, well, it's entirely possible to continue to, for the patient to continue to breathe and his heart beat for a time until, the final beat takes place and rigor mortis sets in.
In other words, basically, as long as you have an airway in and you can keep on a respirator,
right.
Of course, the patient will be alive. I mean, he may be brain dead, but, his vital functions will continue operating almost indefinitely. And you do this simply by pumping more and more and more and more and more money in. We're talking about something somewhere probably between 8 and 9, maybe as much as $9 trillion they put into, in fact, they won't even tell us where most of it's gone. Certainly, the $2 trillion that Ben Bernanke has given away, he won't even tell members of Congress. He won't tell, the courts or whoever, said you have to tell where this money, this is American money, and, oh, no, I don't have to, it's a trade secret. $2 trillion, and they won't tell anybody where it's gone. What are they covering up?
Well, it's pretty brassy. You have to say that they're just taking money out of our treasury with impunity and refusing to tell us where it went. So this is the behavior. This is the kind of behavior that you would expect from a criminal who has embezzled something and refuses to help the prosecutors find out the money trail. And this is not the behavior of a diplomat for sure, or a statesman.
No, these people make Bernie Madoff look like a piker. I mean, he only stole $50 billion. I mean, we're talking about $2 trillion, and Ben Bernanke will not tell us where it went. I thought we were going to have transparency now, or maybe we're going to have a transparent opacity, something of that sort. I mean, sure, I'm sure they'll have an analogy for us, but they're not going to tell us where this money goes. I think we're seeing the greatest transfer of wealth from the common people of this country to the extremely wealthy, to the international financiers and bankers that has ever occurred throughout all time, and eventually they're going to destroy the value of our currency and impoverish our people. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I think I'd agree with it, and somebody's probably going to appoint a committee before this is done to investigate all these things. Like Congress establishes committees from time to time for things. Remember there was a 9/11 commission after the 9/11 attack? And do you remember who the first chairman of that committee was when they committee together and released it?
Well, it was supposed to be Henry Kissinger. But, of course, he's coming to the Trial Outer Commission. They brought in Lee Hamilton, who had been a member of the Trial Outer Commission. I've forgotten who the chairman was, but he came from the Council on Foreign Relations. It was not a committee aimed at revealing what had happened. It was on concealing what had happened. And they never got to any of the important issues. And there were testimony by 1,200 people taken in secret, and 1,100 of those testimonies were sealed for 50 years so the American people would never know what really happened on September 11th, and who was really responsible for the murder of those people, and then sending our boys over to fight and bleed and suffer and die in Afghanistan and Iraq. And why are we fighting in Afghanistan today? Can anybody out there in the listening audience give me a rational reason why we are fighting in Afghanistan today when Osama bin Laden is supposedly hiding in Pakistan? Of course, I think he's been dead for years, but it doesn't matter. I mean, why are we fighting there? Well, go right ahead.
Well, yeah, I was being facetious, of course, about appointing a committee But, you know, every time we've had any kind of an investigative committee, the people that end up at it are always the same people who seem to be involved in the scam in the first place.
I don't know if you've seen the report of the first and second report of the panel that was a congressional oversight panel that was reported to find out what happened to the TARP funds. But the second report is really fascinating because they came out, I think, in the 8th or 10th of January. And basically they said, you know, we can't get a straight answer from the Treasury Department. We asked them what they did with the money. They said, we're spending it to stabilize the system. Well, how are you spending it to stabilize the system? Well, you don't have to ask us that. I mean, certainly we know what we're doing. You know, we're spending the money. And, you know, they said, we cannot get a straight answer from the Treasury Department as to what they're doing. They keep changing their justification. They keep changing what they're doing. I mean, we're appointed by the Congress to figure out what's going on. You can get this up on the Internet. If you can't, we have it available through Radio Liberty. But it's the second report. We have the first report. We have the second report. And the one thing I can assure you is they're concealing the truth from the American people. Go right ahead.
Exactly, Dr. Stan. I want to probably mention a couple of articles that we have up right now on AugustReview.com that would be useful for your listeners to read. The most recent is called Obama Trilateral Commission Endgame, and that contains a lot of the material we've been talking about tonight, about all the people that Obama has appointed so far to his administration. And then the commentary, the article I did right before that, was called titled A Chorus Call for New World Order. And that was also a very instructive article, I believe, that that points out that the whole world is clamoring right now for a new world order to be created out of this crisis. And leading that charge are the same people like Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Paul Volcker, Brent Scowcroft, and so on.
But you see, if they solve the problem, how will they get the new world order? They can't solve the problem. They have to continue this thing going. That's why this is a game. They have the money. They could have solved the problem. They did not want to solve the problem. They want to continue it. Until people understand that, nothing going on makes sense today.
They're snapping the trap for the new world order is what we're saying.
Absolutely.
Right. The trap is snapping shut right now. And the fact that the economy is getting tanked around the world is immaterial. They've got theirs. They're insulated enough from economic devastation that they can sit back and allow it to collapse in order to get all of the marbles, so to speak, into their little bag by creating a new international economic order along the way. In the end of it, they'll end up owning everything.
The greatest transfer of wealth that has ever occurred in modern times is occurring today. And, of course, the people in the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, are getting it. Incidentally, I might mention that the CEO of J.P. Morgan, Chase, and, of course, the CEO of Goldman Sachs, would you believe that they're members of this little group of 87 people who in the North American chapter of the Trilateral Commission? Isn't that a coincidence?
Well, some coincidence. The European contingent of the Trilateral Commission, by the way, are the people that you see consistently since the beginning of the congealing of the European states into the European Union, which we have today. The early days, the middle days, and the latter days have all been influenced by these same people. The European members of the Trilateral Commission. They have been the architects and the implementers of the European Union. And this is now well documented. Even David Rockefeller acknowledged it in his last work that members, early members of the Trilateral Commission, were instrumental in kicking off the big play for that we end up with the European Union. It was their blueprint that put that in place.
And is that in his book, Memoirs?
Yes.
And we actually carry that book. We want people to read it. We want to read what he has to say about it. How his daughter is such a good friend of that wicked communist who hates capitalism, a man named Fidel Castro. Why would David Rockefeller's daughter be going down there, violating the law repeatedly, to visit their good friend, Fidel Castro? Or maybe nothing. Maybe nothing that we believe is actually true. Go right ahead, Patrick.
Dr. Stan, it's interesting. I don't know that I mentioned this on the air, and I wouldn't reveal any more about it, but Tony Sutton had many friends around the world back in the 70s and 80s because of his association with Stanford. One of his good friends was an airline pilot for a major airline back in those days, and he was a senior pilot, probably one of the most senior pilots, 747 international routes and so on. And he told Tony one time that that he had evidence that that David Rockefeller was able to fly in and out of the Soviet Union without passport and basically just in his private plane.
Isn't that nice? Say, oh, it's great to have friends in high places, or maybe you are the high places.
That's right. Maybe you are the high place, but you know, it's like. We never wrote about this at the time. We didn't have the proof. The proof wasn't made available to us in such a way that we could write it, you know, that we could document it. But it spoke volumes about how the David Rockefellers of the world feel like they are above the laws of the world. They create their own laws. They go that benefits them and keeps everybody else in line. And, so, you know, we've seen these people dealing with communist China. Remember, it was Henry Kissinger that first visited communist China under Richard Nixon to open up diplomatic relations with China that allowed the economic China that we have today that's whipping our pants. They've dealt with communist China. They've dealt with basically all of the Marxist communist regimes of the world, whether they be in Africa or South America or the USSR itself. We see these people all over these various countries, dealing with them directly over the years. Why Americans have not asked questions about this, you know, that this treasonous activity, as far as I'm concerned, to deal with murderers and henchmen, but they have no problem with that. And the scary thing is, these are the people that are saying that they would like to rule over us.
In fact, the Chinese communists between 1958 and 1962 killed between 41 and 43 million people, their own people, just starved them to death. And not a word of that in the American media. And, of course, Sydney in 1973, David Rockefeller came back from China saying, and writing an editorial in the New York Times, said, you know, the social experiment in China is one of the most significant and successful of all time. The social experiment in China under the leadership of Chairman Mao is one of the most important and successful in history. That's how they look at it. It's just these people die, so what? I mean, isn't it interesting? We always hear about the 6 million Jews. We never hear about the 40 to 43 million Chinese communists who were intensely starved to death. You'll find it in the internet called the Great Hunger. They usually use the figure of 30 million. That's the Great Hunger. Look it up on the internet. But the real figure is 41 to 43 million. We can't let the American people know that. They might question what our leaders are doing. I mean,
right.
As we build up communist China, where do you think they got the money for their great cities? All from American banks and from the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund and the East Asian Development Bank, Patrick, we're out of time. We're going to do this again this week on some of our other programs. So thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night. God bless you. I certainly mind you, too. And, of course, Patrick's certainly one of our favorite guests. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course we do talk through the breaks. If you'd like the complete talk, you can get it on CD or video, or pardon me, on audio tape. Why give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you want to understand what's going on financially, let me suggest my November and December 2008 newsletters on the Internet. If you get anything through us, well, of course, we'll be glad to provide copies of the newsletter free of charge, but you can pull them down on the Internet yourself if you have access to it. November and December, you need to understand that this whole thing is a scam. It's a deadly scam. It's going to destroy the lives of most people here in the United States because they're not going to try to stop the cascading price of homes. They're not going to stop the bankruptcy of businesses, and more people are going to end up losing literally everything they have. Cindy, if you would like to hear my talk, it was given about 3 years ago, The Financial Tsunami. And there's a syllabus that goes with that. It's important material. That's The Financial Tsunami. I have pamphlets called The History of Money, Which You Should Know, and The Financial Meltdown. That's The History of Money and The Financial Meltdown. And then the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, and, of course, Fiat Money, Inflation in France. Three important books. That The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, The Creature from Jekyll Island, and Fiat Money, Inflation in France. My pamphlets on the history of money, what you should know, and, of course, the financial meltdown, and then our talk on the financial tsunami. You need this information to understand what's going on today if you have any hope at all of surviving, because they're intent upon toppling our economic system, and the people who created the problems are now in control of the problem. Mr. Geithner has been working with Henry Paulson specifically not to address the issue, but they can't tell the American people that. You're supposed to believe they're doing everything they can to protect you. After all, there's that old saying, I'm from the government, I'm here to help. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. We do hope that you laid in a supply of emergency food, that you got yourself a Berkey water filter, that you laid in the supplies of the health products you need, that you've got the garden in a can. The seeds, they're advertising with us now. You'll hear our advertisement. But the other issues as far as long-term storage food, Berkey water filters and the health products, we do have them. You can get information off of our website or call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send you a catalog free of charge. We want you to get the information. And there's so many books and tape sets and certainly DVDs that are there, videos. You need to have the information. And then we encourage you, if you don't make a profit out of it, copy anything we've made, whether it's our newsletters, whether it's our DVDs or videos, whether it's our tape sets, get them out. Your job is to get the information to people. Only God can make them listen, but your job is to reach as many people as you can, get them listening to our programs. They'll start out thinking we're crazy, and before long they're going to be afraid we're not. Let me recommend Patrick Wood's excellent website, AugustReview.com. That's AugustReview.com, and we certainly recommend his work. He certainly does an excellent job. Patrick's a personal friend. We've enjoyed working with him, and we recommend his material to you. That's AugustReview.com. And then, of course, we have a great new DVD. It's called The Eye of the Phoenix, put out by Chris Pinto. And, of course, it tells you the story of the emblem on the back of the dollar bill, the occult Luciferian emblem on the back of the dollar bill. Who put it there? Of course, it was Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was deeply involved in the occult. And his Secretary of Agriculture, Henry Wallace, was involved with theosophy and the worship of Lucifer, and, of course, with masonry. And so the Eye of the Phoenix, again, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack from within today. Please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.